Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're about to have a conversation with Walter Lomax, a person who served many years in our state prison before being exonerated, founder and project director for Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative, a project of fusion partnerships. This must be a fusion partnership day here on the air. That's not a bad thing. They do great work. Walter Lomax, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Welcome.
Doing great. Thanks for inviting me back again.
It's always a pleasure to see you. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join us. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. So tell us about this conference. I participated in the one you had last year here at Morgan State University. Tell us what's coming up.
Okay. First, Mark, like yourself, I need to do a plug. Fusion Partnership, and Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative is a project of Fusion Partnership,
right. Inc.,
and we are supported in part by Baltimore OSI. And I want to give a special shout-out to Dr. Anna McFadden, the chair of the Social Work Department here, for allowing us to host this event here. Right? Yes, yeah, exactly. I want to first say, Mark, that this is a controversial issue. It really is. And while I was in prison, the officials used to tell me all the time that I needed an attitude adjustment. In fact, some of them tell me I need an attitude adjustment since I've been out. But I'm not the person that goes along to get along, and I'm not one of those folk that get in where they can fit in. And so I understand that this is a very controversial issue, and some people don't like to take it on.
And what's the issue that's controversial?
The issue is folk that are serving parole-eligible life sentences, specifically those who were juveniles and those who were convicted under the felony murder statute. And what surrounds that, which is one of the reasons why we are hosting the town hall meeting, is because last year the Court of Appeals here in Maryland issued a ruling, which was called the Unger decision, that allowed people that were convicted prior to 1980 to be entitled to new trials. And these folk were serving parole-eligible life sentences. And ironically, they are some of the same people that we have been advocating on behalf of for many, many years.
Because many of them went in when they were kids, teenagers.
And, you know, exactly. And since their release, they returned to the community and began to become assets to their community. And initially when they were being released, they were being portrayed in the media, specifically Fox 45, as that they were murderers and rapers, as if they were an imminent threat to society. And we are bringing most of these folk that have been released to the town hall meeting to actually demonstrate that, one, that they are no longer a threat, that they were never a threat to public safety when the consideration was being given for their release, and that they've actually returned to the community and are assets.
This is so complex for some people because people hear that somebody's committed a murder, a felony murder, and the immediate question is, well, why should they ever see the light of day? That would be that's what a lot of people would say.
Well, and maybe in some cases, rightly so. I guess it depends on the circumstances of the crime. But however, these folk, when they were tried and convicted, they were entitled to, based on the statute, meaningful consideration for release at some point. And the statute that covers parole-eligible life sentences, remember the statute that mandated life without parole is something totally different. And I believe that statute was, or when it was created, it was one maybe looking at people that they may wanted to consider for the death penalty, but could not, or two, to distinguish those people that were serving parole-eligible life sentences from those people that there was never an intent for them to be released.
So now tell me I know it's the Unger decision. We've been talking about that on the air, and people who've been released because of that, and more people may be released because of the Unger decision, a part of it being the kind of instructions to juries that were given back before that 81 were instructions that were really prejudicial against the person who was on trial, which they're not allowed to do anymore.
Exactly.
What's going to happen at your conference? I mean, what are you pushing for? What do you want to see happen?
Well, we are advocating on behalf of a change in the current policy. Currently, the only way individuals can be released from prison that are serving these type sentences is through the governor's signature. And since 1995, when former Governor Glenn Dennis instituted his Life Means Life policy, subsequent governors have pretty much maintained that same status, even though Governor Ehrlich commuted a few life sentences during
he
his
did.
Term.
Right.
It gave the appearance that the policy had changed, but it did not, in fact, change because he did not parole anyone.
It's always funny to me, and I'm not going to get in the politics of it too much because this is not your role, but it's always funny to me personally that it's the liberal Democrats always have a harder time making these decisions about reforming our prison system than Republicans do, it seems, at times.
So that seems to be the case. That definitely seems to be
That's
the case.
Always kind of a strange contradiction there. But.
And so what we hope to accomplish during the town hall meeting on Saturday, we have folk who are victims of crimes, will be a part of the panelists. We have folk that are victim advocates groups that will be there. And we also have some folk who were formerly incarcerated that will be a part of the panel. We have social workers from the University of Maryland and the Office of the Public Defender's Office who are assisting in the transition of the people that's being released under the Unger decision. And we also have other organizations that currently support the work that we are doing. And at some level, we are looking at maybe even raising this as a constitutional issue, specifically in light of Miller v. Alabama, where juveniles cannot be sentenced to mandatory life without parole. Because currently in Maryland, with there being a no-parole policy, these individuals are basically serving life without parole. Some of the ones that have been recently released were incarcerated 20, 30, and in some cases, well, not the juveniles 40 years or more, but some of the individuals that had been incarcerated 40 years or more. But had not the Unger decision allowed them to be released, they would still be incarcerated. So basically, they are serving a life without parole sentence. And so there is some talk and research being done to maybe even raise this as a constitutional issue.
So is there going to be a bill put forward in the state assembly this year by somebody to this rule, change this law?
Yes, we will be advocating for legislation in the 2014 General Assembly session to have the maybe the authority removed from the governor for folk who are serving the juveniles and folk who was convicted under the felony murder law. We know that this is going to be a challenge because next year is an election year. And as I mentioned earlier, this is a very controversial issue. And some people have different opinions of it. But my thoughts is that whatever your ideological or philosophical beliefs on the issue,
right,
the law is still the law. And as long as you look at the issue, and we have research to support our findings, one is that juveniles, when they committed the crimes, were very young, and they were not capable of forming the intent that was necessary for them to continue to be incarcerated. And we have more than enough information to support removal for the felony murder issue because we have folk that did not commit, were not the primary in committing the crime. Two of the individuals that were scheduled to be on the show today, one was a juvenile when they was convicted. It was not the primary in committing the crime. And the other was convicted under the felony murder law as well, was not the primary in committing the crime. But the reality is that these folks just want to return back into society and get on with their life. They're not interested in being a lot of publicity surrounding their release. They don't want their neighbors. They don't want their family members really burdened with the fact that they were incarcerated, and now they're back into the neighborhoods of the community. They want to demonstrate by their actions that they deserve to be there.
Folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, 410-319-8888. You might have a little disagreement about what this is all about. We'd like to hear from you one way or the other, 410-319-8888. The idea whether juveniles should get life without parole or should not. And one of the things you mentioned here, Walter, was it, and I've noticed that some of these cases, if a crime is committed, let's say you're 14, 15 years old and you commit this crime and someone dies in the action of that crime, but you are just standing there. You may be part of the robbery. You may be part of it. Maybe you look out something else and someone gets shot and killed. You're held as deeply liable for that crime as the person who pulled the trigger or killed the person.
You know, absolutely. And we are the only country in the world that actually still has maintains this law. And there is a movement all over the country because it's just an archaic law to even have. There was a case, I don't have it before me, where an individual lent his vehicle to a friend. He was at home asleep. And his friend and some other folk went and committed a crime and someone was murdered. And this individual was charged with that murder and sentenced to life without parole. That is unconscionable.
410-319-8888 is the number here. I want to get these calls coming in. We're also now being joined. Actually, the first caller is a person who was going to be a guest on the show but couldn't make it into the studio, Kareem Hassan. Kareem, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks to be here.
So, Kareem, why don't we just start off by having you tell us your story?
Well, I was 17 years old at the time of the crime that was committed. I was a juvenile, and I received a life sentence. And I spent 37 years of my life incarcerated under the life sentence and felony murder conviction. And I, fortunately, the hunger issue is the only reason why I'm free today, you know, because they basically changed my sentence from life with the possibility of parole to life without parole with the governor's decision of life means life. And thanks to the hunger issue, I'm home today and enjoying my freedom and trying to build my life and future back up nice.
I'm curious both of you think about this. I was thinking about it as I was reading about Kareem and others in the paper when they were released. Is there any effort to do any let me say, I think the struggle to change this law is an important one to have, and we'll be covering it during the course of the session. But is there any effort to do healing here between those who might have been the victim of the crime and those men who are being released today? In terms of, you know, because somebody in some of these cases did die. Something did happen that was horrendous. Is any of that going on?
Well, it's great that you mentioned that, because when Mike Milliman, the professor at the University of Maryland, I was on the program before.
Yes, right.
And Russell Butler from the victims organization called in. He and I have exchanged emails, and there is an intent for us to meet to maybe further that discussion. In fact, one of the individuals that will be on the panel is the research director from the Victims Rights Organization, and she will be there. I guess I could give out a name, Ms. Dee Gardner. She will be on the panel. So there is an effort, and this is why we've invited these folk to try to bring this about.
Well, that makes me feel good, too. That means that our show has served as a bridge to bring people
absolutely,
together.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Which I think is important to do. Because, I mean, that's part of it, too. I think that we are so deeply engaged in the society and culture into punishment as opposed to healing. Not that people don't have to pay, should not have to address the crimes and things they've done, and not be absolved, but or, you know, stand up to what they've done and have to kind of account for what they've done. But we think about it in terms of punishment and not in terms of healing, always.
No, and I agree. I think I mentioned that my younger brother and one of my grandsons was murdered in Baltimore City, and my family is still grieving that loss. I deal with it somewhat different because I understand both sides of the spectrum. I've met a lot of people while I was incarcerated who committed crimes, and I have actually seen them turn their lives around, and I know that they're greatly remorseful for the acts that they committed.
Now, Kareem, the hunger decision was important, Kareem, and we've talked about it here, and we'll talk about it a great deal more. We had a show on it with Mike Middleman, and you were on as well then, Walter. But Kareem, I'm just curious, just from your perspective, 37 years inside the prison system. You were a kid when you went in. You're a grown man now, obviously. Talk about what happened to you. I mean, what are the changes you've been through? Who are you now as opposed to who you were then?
Well, now, a responsible man, you know, because at 17 years old, you're not really conscious of life and the decisions of life and the decisions that you make. You just react on certain situations. And peer pressure plays a major role and when you're young like that. And when you're young like that and then receive a life sentence, I never fathomed that I would be locked up. No, 37 years. When I first went to penitentiary, God told me he was locked up for 20 years. I mean, I was in awe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But from there to then, I mean, I've educated myself. I went in prison, I was a little wild, acting crazy when I first went to prison because of all the stories you hear about prison. So my main thing then was I wasn't going to let nobody take advantage of me. But after guys like Lomax, James Wells, Malik Rothman, brothers like that to pull me up and put my boots on and tell me the right thing to do, I went to school, got my GED, I went to college. And my main focus is juvenile counseling. You know, I was a part of the Scare Straight program.
Uh-huh.
And the Project Turnaround program. I went to Cal State College for high-risk youth counseling courses that I was certified as a juvenile counselor for. You know, and when you first go to prison at 17 years old, your mind is still not developed. But over the years, when you develop yourself and develop your mind, you look back on things that you, I mean, you know, because all of us did things at 17 that we wasn't proud of now. You know, and I'm quite sure a lot of people that's listening, when they were 17, they done things that they wouldn't do then. I'm not the same person that I was 37 years ago
mm-hmm.
when I went in. And that's when a lot of people fail to recognize is that you change, you grow. You evolve. And at 17, yeah, I was young and dumb and a reactionary. And then I grew in prison from strong brothers directing me and me taking initiative to do the right thing. And my whole thing was when I was locked up was praying that I could get home and spend some time with my mother. She just turned 85 years old. And I'm home with her today. She's very sickly, but I thank God that I'm here today. And I just want to say that we're not senseless individuals. I mean, I grieve for the victims and the victim family also because I see what's happened. Because my nephew was killed. My sister's son was killed when he was 18 years old. And I seen how it affected her. You know, so I see both sides of her. And I'm definitely a humble, remorseful individual nowadays. You know, and I apologize to the victim family. I tried to have contact with them, but they never contacted me back. You know, and the only one that I know that actually did that was a guy named James Wells. He actually sat down with the victim family and talked to them, and they no longer oppose his release.
Those are stories we have to hear more of. And Kareem Hassan, we're just about out of time, but Kareem Hassan, who was formerly incarcerated, released on the Younger Decision, has joined us as well as Walter Lomax, who spent many years in prison, founder and project director, and unfairly, founder and project director of the Maryland Restorative Justice Initiative, a project of fusion partnerships. I say that he was exonerated and they had to let him out of prison. Walter Lomax, we're talking about. And Walter, very quickly again, what is going to be happening this weekend and how people can get in touch?
You can get in touch. You can reach me by phone, 443-413-6076, and by email, Walter Mandala, M-A-N-D-A-L-A, Lomax, L-O-M-E-X, at hotmail.com. And what we hope to be able to do, one, is to bring together both sides of the issue and to also advocate for legislation that we hope to have introduced in next year's General Assembly session on juveniles, a focal with juveniles, and those convicted under the felony murder statute.
That's this Saturday, September 22nd, here at Morgan State University. Keynote speakers will include Senator Nat McFadden, Senator Lisa Gladden, Sonia Kumar from the ACLU. People from victims' rights organizations as well will be among panelists in this discussion. We'll have all the information how to contact Walter Lomax on our website. Do attend if you can. It's an important conversation to be had. Thank you, Walter, for being with us.
Thank you, Mark.
I want to remind you to join me this coming Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Radical Book Fair Pavilion. And thank you, Kareem. The Radical Book Fair Pavilion at the Baltimore Book Festival, where I'll be moderating a discussion with Gaurav Alperovitz, Dr. Lester Spence, and Maryland State Senator Jamie Raskin. We'll speak about Alperovitz's book, What Then We Must Do, and ask the difficult questions about our economy, corporate capitalism, and alternatives to the 21st century. More information, you can go to baltimorebookfestival.com and see you there this Sunday. Reminding you here that the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery, Stephanie Mavronis, and our engineer is Andrea Melton. You can podcast this show for information about our guests by visiting us on our website at steinershow.org. And you can also now download and listen to our podcast on iTunes. And we're going to go out with the Beatles, Come Together. This was the day that Abbey Road was released, one of my favorite albums, and we'll play a little bit of that going out here. And so for Public Radio to be EAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner, Michelle Martin, and Tommy Moore coming up behind us. Take care. Have a lovely day.